If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, today felt like the Olympics, as far as I'm concerned, from a tennis perspective. And it's really the first time that I've felt like this, but I've nearly cried about four times today watching tennis matches. And it's because of the moments of victory for players after golds and bronze medals, and the fact that it clearly meant so much to them, and that they were striving to get over the line, and it was really difficult. And those that did showed everybody just how much it meant to them. And I've absolutely loved it, Catherine, today.
Me too, mostly. I mean, I've loved every day of the Olympics, slightly less so the tennis than my average, sort of my average enjoyment of the day. That, you know, we've discussed the weird tennis Olympics, but it's such a wonderful and curious thing that tennis suddenly for a week becomes a sport where you can celebrate coming second and third, particularly coming third. The joy on the face of Elena Svitolina and Pablo Carreño Busta today at winning bronze medals was just pure joy, and yet it's so counter to everything in the sport. You know, imagine losing a Grand Slam semi-final and walking off the court in tears of joy, or doing a lap of honour with your country's flag. I mean, just doesn't happen. I mean, even if in, you know, the weeks afterwards you can reflect upon it having been a great tournament and a great run, in that moment you're gutted. And yet here they are with their bronze medals, looking like it's the most wonderful thing that's ever happened to them. And that's curious but great.
And it is totally understandable from the outside. I'm watching them, I'm with them, I'm feeling every moment that they're going through. One theory that Catherine's got, Matt, I'm curious to see what you think of this, is that she'd rather have a bronze medal in tennis than a silver.
In any sport.
In any sport?
In any sport, yeah.
Okay, right, now you're going to have to explain yourself there.
Because
I get it in tennis, where you've got to win a match in order to win a bronze.
That state of mind would be enhanced in sports where there is a bronze medal match, in head-to-head sports that have the same format or similar to tennis, where you lose a silver and win a bronze, definitely. But even overall, looking at a silver, I would always... This is in the hypothetical world where I'm imagining that I'm an elite athlete. Obviously, this is a leap, and I might be... It's so hypothetical that, you know, it could be completely wrong. But in this hypothetical world, I know myself. I know my hypothetical self as better than anybody. And I think that looking at a silver medal, I would always see what it's not. I would always see that it's not the gold, whereas I wouldn't see that in a bronze medal. I would see that as just the joy of I got an Olympic medal.
Go on, Matt. What do you think?
I think I would rather have the silver. Perhaps in the moment, particularly in the tennis, I certainly, and other sports where there's a playoff for that bronze medal, I can certainly understand that. Ending on a high, ending on winning, I totally get that. And I think our Olympics relived shows sort of told us that. You know, Leander Paes was a lot more content than Marty Fish, for example. I mean, he's a lot more content than anyone about his bronze medal, but there's a direct comparison there. But I don't know, a silver is better than a bronze, and I think eventually I would be able to tell myself that.
I mean, there is a debate there to be had about the fact that I realise this is a harsh interpretation and David Law's going to hate it, and mostly I'm playing devil's advocate here, but the celebration of not winning that happens at the Olympics in the form of silvers and bronzes is a little bit counter to sort of something fundamental about sport. I am mostly playing devil's advocate, folks. I am in favour of there being silver and bronze medals.
No, but, I do know what you mean.
But that is a thing, and it only really applies at the Olympics. I know there are other events that give out medals, world championships and stuff, but you're more likely to refer to world champion than world championships gold medal winner. You know, medals are about the Olympics, really. And I just think, I don't know, I'd see silver and I think we didn't win. And I'd see bronze and I'd see you were there, you were part of it and you got something to show for it. That's great. I wouldn't see what it's not.
Very interesting. Yeah. Yeah, I'm enjoying it, the scenarios that you've put forward there. Well, let's go through the what we did have in terms of people that won medals today and the moments, because I think what all of the matches had in common today, I mean, there's one big outlier as well in Novak Djokovic's day and how that turned out. We'll go on to talk about that a bit later. But let's talk about the people whose careers felt like they were made today, no matter what else happens. And that starts with Belinda Bencic, who's won the gold medal in the women's singles. And she could still back that up and win the doubles gold as well, because she's going to play alongside Victoria Golubic against Katerina Siniakova and Barbora Krejcikova tomorrow. And all of the matches that we saw were belters, and they were nerve shredders. And this one between her and Markéta Vondrousova was one of them. 7-5, 2-6, 6-3. And Bencic is such an interesting player because she's been around for such a long time, for someone who's still young in terms of being early 20s. And yet it's a long old time since she reached that first US Open quarterfinal and came across on our radars as this incredible junior talent. And she was very sort of reflective about her road to this point in her post-match interview, and how, you know, you do have ups and downs, and she's such an example of it. And she's had some horrible injuries. And I've also felt she has under-delivered, really, on her degree of talent at stages. And honestly, I'd pretty much forgotten about her, really. When we come to Grand Slams, she's not in my mind. And yet she's just won the gold medal. And it was a cracking match, Matt. I mean, it was probably the most nervous one of the day. But I got what I came for, in a way, with the rally types and certainly the ending, because she was beside herself at the end. She was shaking and crying without any ability to do anything about it. She didn't want to do anything about it. She just collapsed into the arms of her, I think, husband or boyfriend.
Boyfriend and fitness trainer, I believe. And he's doing good work because she coped with the heat well.
Yeah, well, she certainly did that. And it was, I found it really moving to see just how much it meant to her.
Yeah, totally. I will never tire of those scenes at the end of any Olympics event, really, seeing someone win a medal for their country and it means so much. I thought it was a really good match. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was tough for them to have a not before start time for a gold medal match. You know, they were waiting around. The two matches before them were both three setters. And kind of given that, given the occasion, I thought they both played pretty well. There were points when they were both striking it beautifully. And it really delivered, as you said, on what it promised in terms of interesting rallies. And I find Bencic quite a tough player to figure out. I sometimes think she really likes pace. I think of her record against the Sarka. She's got a brilliant record. She's on a hard court against her. She sort of turned that pace back on her. But then I saw her today at times against Vondrosheva, and it felt like this was a matchup she enjoyed, where she was able to sort of step in and take control of some rallies. And I think perhaps she is adaptable and she can play in all sorts of ways. And that is one of her great strengths, perhaps, and it is a wonder sometimes that she hasn't won more. I do think she's had such a stop-start career, hasn't she? It's sort of when she really had that breakthrough, she then had some really bad injuries, and then she had a great 2019 season, reached the WTA finals, she was in the top 10, and then COVID hits, and she had that momentum stopped last season. So I think maybe we've not had a chance to find out what her true potential is. I do wonder whether this will be the pinnacle, as you've suggested there. I'm not convinced she will go on and sort of build from this and win Grand Slams. But if she can stay healthy, then maybe she will. She has got such a nice game. And yeah, great scenes at the end. And it was a very tennis at the Olympics result because, you know, Switzerland have had so much success at the Olympics over the last 30 years. But they're peak success has come from the players you wouldn't expect necessarily. You know, Federer's got a gold in the doubles, of course, but their singles golds have been Mark Rosse and Belinda Bencic. And you think they've had Stan Wawrinka, Martina Hingis, Roger Federer, who haven't got those golds. It was very kind of, it just told you a lot about what tennis at the Olympics is, where we do get these surprise results from time to time.
Yeah. That record in itself is pretty extraordinary, and it's not alone, is it? It's where a nation has just suddenly produced the surprise winner of the little cluster that nobody's really counting on. I mean, that's happened with other nations. You think of Nicolas Massou going and winning singles and doubles gold, which Bencic might go and do, and you know, Marcelo Rios, who's had all the headlines, and he wasn't able to do anything like that, despite having got to world number one. But a great scene, and I hope she can build on it because she brings a lot, really, as a player. I do find, though, Catherine, when I'm watching her, I feel quite anxious watching her because she looks like she is holding on by a very thin thread, really, to her nerves during matches. She seems to be able to navigate it, but she will miss a shot and she will turn around. I don't know who she's having a go at, but it's almost Andy Murray like. Just you are the problem, you know, you over there in my support team, what is going on here? How have I missed that?
Yeah, it can feel sort of all cobbled together with sort of sticky tape at times, can't it? But then equally, I don't quite feel that anxiety watching her. I don't know, I felt quite, it was very up and down deciding set, but I did always sort of have the feeling that Bencic was going to win. Maybe that's the beauty of hindsight saying that, but I did, for whatever reason, maybe just stupidity on my part, I did sort of have confidence in her in that final set. And she actually took a medical timeout for treatment on some blisters before Vondrosheva had to come out and serve. And I did worry that the warmth of the embrace afterwards wouldn't be what it ended up being because of that, because generally speaking, that's considered, whilst within the rules, poor form to take an injury timeout before your opponent serve. I mean, it looked to me like, you know, she had really bad blisters and that happens in extreme heat and humidity. See Hyun Chung at the Australian Open a few years ago. That was as ghastly a sight as I've ever seen involving the human body. But I did worry because Vondrejcev ended up dropping serve at that point, and Bencic then served it out. You know, you could see that as quite a critical moment, actually, and I worried that that's how Vondrejcev would see it. But maybe she thought, oh, it's just the universe getting me back for biffing off Mukova. And took it on the chin. Anyway, it was a lovely warm embrace afterwards.
What one thing I did like, by the way, was the fact that Vondrejcev, when she was trying to break back to get back in the match, she really went for a shot. And that was a bit of a theme because the same happened in the bronze medal match between Rybakina and Svitolina. You know, getting over the line was difficult because the opponent was just going for broke.
And I was pleased generally for Vondrejcev that she got to show what she was all about in this match. You know, I think of the last time she played a really significant final was that 2019 Roland Garros final, and it was a blowout. You know, she didn't perform well, and it was a slightly strange match. And I think people left that match, if they were just casual viewers, they might have wondered kind of what Vondrejcev was doing in the French Open final. But actually, she's got a lot of talent in those hands, and she's got a really nice game, which she put out there today, and it did cause Bencic a lot of problems at times. So I thought that was nice for her to play well, and I agree, it was a slightly controversial end to that match with that medical timeout, the timing of it. You know, she could have taken it before one of her service games. I do think, almost think that should be a rule.
Yeah, well, Joe Jury in commentary thought it was a rule, because I think perhaps at some point in the past it was a rule. I don't know, but everybody seems in agreement that it ought to be a rule, and yet it's not. So yeah, there it is. Yeah. But Vondrejcev didn't seem that bothered about it.
No, it was a warm embrace, wasn't it? The bronze medal match in the women's saw Elena Svitolina come back from a set down and a 1-6 set down to beat Elena Rybakina 1-6-7, 6-6-4, and it took her 7 match points to get over the line. I mean, I was watching that and feeling every one of them because we've covered Svitolina for so long now, and she's always been in the conversation. She's won really good titles at Premier 5 level. She was almost like a specialist, wasn't she, at that level of tournaments. And pretty big tournaments on the tour, and she would win Rome, and she was seen to be up there with Halep. But then she'd get to the Grand Slams, and she just couldn't raise her level at all. She couldn't go with somebody who peaks. And I don't feel she will ever win a Grand Slam singles title. I don't really think she'll reach a final. Maybe she will use this as the platform and prove me wrong. I'd be pleased for her if she did. But again, I feel like now, in a way, it doesn't matter so much, because this was a moment that she will always look back on with such affection, is how it seemed to me. This was her Grand Slam final in some ways. And she was hanging on, trying to hold off this huge hitter from Kazakhstan, who really should have won, if we're honest. Because and I do wonder whether Rybakina, given that she was so comfortably in charge of this, and there was the match earlier on in the tournament as well.
Is she not a closer?
Has she got a problem? I mean, I think she probably does have a problem.
Well, I watched both those matches, and I don't know how she lost them both. She was the better player in the semi-final, and I thought she was the better player today overall, and she had leads in both matches, and yeah, she didn't close, and it does suggest she has a little bit of a problem. This was a really interesting match because they were total opposites. You know, Rybakina hits such a smooth tennis ball and makes it look so easy to generate power. And then down the other end, you've got Svitolina, who is the total opposite of that. You see all the effort she's putting in, and she's just a hustler, and she's gritty. and you can't counter out in matches. And I think if Rybakina does have a closing problem, Svitolina was sort of the nightmare opponent because she was not going to go away. She was going to cling to you, and she did. She reeled off the last five games of the match, and as you said, that final game was an ordeal, but she got through it, and she sort of exposed, I think, that little element of Rybakina's game that she needs to tighten up, because if she can tighten that up, she's going to be a real force. I think I overlooked perhaps how good she is. I think she had that breakthrough, didn't she, at the start of last year, and then obviously COVID hit, and then I thought maybe she was just a big hitter who lacked a little bit of subtlety in her game, and we've seen a lot of those, and they only go so far. But I actually think Rybakina is so good.
Talking about Kuzmova.
That would be lacks a lot of subtlety.
It's like I'm not falling into that trap again.
I'm not. I'm just not entertaining Kuzmova chat.
What's interesting, though, is the way Rybakina just played out of her mind when she was on the brink of defeat. And she was hitting winner after winner and making them look easy. And yet here she was 4-1 up in the deciding set. And honestly, it looked inevitable that she would win at that point. And what I do find funny is that Svitolina did play that kind of dog with a bone approach to her comeback and just refused to let Rybakina have it easily. Whereas I think sometimes in the Grand Slam, she goes a little bit vacant in the moments when it feels like there isn't fight. She isn't making them work hard enough sometimes. And I don't know, maybe there was less pressure in a way in this particular match for her, but just seeing her again, I'm going to be repeating myself a lot in this show, because that's the theme for Bencic, see Svitolina, see Pablo Carreño Busta, who we may as well talk about straight away, because you came out with a really good line, Catherine, about Pablo Carreño Busta at the end of his victory.
You're exposing me.
What? Well, it was just great. I think it was really great that you pointed out that he's kind of elevated himself from the pack with that moment.
That's not what I said. Given.
I'm helping you out.
What goes on WhatsApp stays on WhatsApp.
He throws me under the bus, and then he offers me a hand to dredge myself out from under the bus.
No, but I feel that I haven't got a very strong opinion of Pablo Carreño Busta.
It's really annoying for the listeners right now. You have to just tell them what I said.
I can't remember what you said.
It was
exactly
that good. I said, that is the first time Pablo Carreño Busta has ever elicited an emotion from me. And obviously I was exaggerating for comic effect. But I think we all know what I was getting at.
Yeah, he's a bit of a run-of-the-mill player who doesn't exactly set the pulse racing most of the time. And actually the most entertained I've ever been by him was when he lost his marbles after the Kane-Ishikori match and chucked his bag over the net or whatever it was. That was amazing. And then obviously he was the opponent of Novak Djokovic when Djokovic got defaulted. We'll come on to that in a minute. But, I mean, look, I've always thought he's a really good opponent. I remember when he was the opponent of Denis Shapovalov at the US Open last year, and that was a fantastic match. And you know, I'll be honest, I kind of wanted Shapovalov to win. I wanted it to be his breakthrough. He was playing all these spectacular shots. And Carreño Busta was a worthy winner because he responded and he came out with the counterattack. But he doesn't do it for me most of the time as a tennis player. I am not setting my alarm to watch Pablo Carreño Busta matches. But on the moment that he won against Novak Djokovic 6-4, 6-7, 6-3 on his sixth match point, and the way he fell to the ground and just couldn't really get up because he was overcome by emotion, and he just sat in his chair and he just sobbed, I thought it was the ultimate in human spirit at the Olympics.
He fell perfectly sort of framing the Olympic rings that were painted onto the court, didn't he? It was sort of an Naomi Osaka US Open type perfect overhead visual moment. Yeah, it really got me. It was really special.
And he said something afterwards, which I actually think was what turned the match in his favour. And he said, "This feels like a gold. I've never had a feeling like this, and it feels like a gold."
Oh, he wouldn't feel that way if it was silver. He wouldn't.
No, well, in tennis, he wouldn't. I agree with you.
But I think he saw this as the biggest match of his life and an opportunity to do something great. And Novak Djokovic was the opposite. Look, he wanted to win, but at the same time, it was also something he could do without, based on what happened to him yesterday. He was still feeling the effects of yesterday. That was very understandable. It was very, very sudden how quickly things went wrong for Novak Djokovic at this tournament. He didn't have a lot of time to process all of that. And I think Carreño Busta sensed early on that Djokovic was kind of there for the taking. And he went toe-to-toe with him from the baseline. He manages to frustrate Djokovic in a way that not many players can. It really is to Carreño Busta's credit that we've seen some outbursts from Djokovic against Carreño Busta. I think that is one of the ultimate compliments. That disqualification at the US Open happened for many reasons, but one of the reasons was that Carreño Busta was sticking with him and not making it easy. And he did that again today.
It's funny, isn't it? It's totally on paper, not the type of player that I would expect to trouble Djokovic. It's the same thing that befuddles me a bit about the way that Roberto Bautista Agut troubles Djokovic, because I just sort of put them in the category of player that does the things Djokovic does, but not as well as Djokovic. And those matchups tend to be very one-sided, just in favour of the superior player, which obviously overall Djokovic absolutely is. But yeah, it's a really, really interesting one to me.
Yeah, well, it was eerily similar to Flushing Meadows. Hard court, no crowd, close, tense Djokovic. And what I didn't know, I missed a period of the third set. And I was going to say how sporting I thought Djokovic was waiting for about 30 seconds for Carreño Busta to gather himself off the Olympic rings painted on the court and actually go and shake hands. And he just stood there patiently and waited for him and gave him a hug, which was really nice. And I thought, how sporting. What I didn't know that Djokovic had had a couple of outbursts in that third set, which, I mean, like, I love a racket smash, but that what he did, I didn't like, really. First of all, he chucked his racket up into the stand. Now, the stand was empty. It wasn't coming near anybody. But, I mean, you've also got to get that right, because if you slightly get your throw wrong, it is going over the heads of some people on the court. And then the more egregious one was wrapping the racket frame, literally smashing it as hard as he could sideways into the net post, and the head of the racket came off. And I don't know what happened to the handle. But, I mean, it was... I didn't like seeing that, and I don't quite know where you draw the line with that, because here I am, I love racket smashes, but I don't like that. So I don't know whether I'm being fair, but it was the ultimate credit to Carreño Busta that he'd driven him to that limit.
And he thought that Novak Djokovic had got a point penalty for those two offences, because the chucking it into the stands, I believe, went completely unpunished. There was actually nothing that the umpire did about that, and then got a code violation for the racket smash. But I think Carreño Busta thought those two things had accumulated and caused a point penalty, and he actually went out to one game and stood at the Love 15 side of the court, thinking that the game would be starting from that, and it wasn't. It was starting from Love All. And look, I think he probably had a point. I think that, as you said, chucking it into the stand, it wasn't dangerous the way it ended up, but it could have been, because he didn't have total control over that. It was pretty impulsive and reckless. Just very similar to, as you said, US Open.
Mm. Subsequent to this, as Corinna Buster celebrated his bronze medal and this huge moment for
him. He's beaten, by the way. Sorry, just he's beaten Medvedev and Djokovic at this tournament. The world number one and world number two.
Amazing.
Incredible.
That's fantastic. Fantastic achievement for him. And again, like the other two players we mentioned, Svitolina and Bencic, he could retire with this, really, and be happy forever, I think, as a tennis player with that knowledge that achievement was his. But Djokovic, as you say, I mean, I give him credit for certainly for going to Tokyo and playing the Olympics at all. I'm glad he did do that and give it a shot. As I was saying last night, I think he tried hard in this match, but he was absolutely close to empty during it, and Corinna Buster, a worthy winner. He got his tactics completely right and was a worthy winner. And Djokovic looked at the end of his tether pretty much. I didn't expect him to withdraw from the mixed doubles bronze medal match, which is what he did do. He cited a shoulder injury. There seemed to be some disagreement over which shoulder it was, and eventually I think they settled on the left shoulder.
But then he subsequently gave some quotes to the journalist Sasha Rosmo that said it was mental and physical exhaustion. So,
right. Let's read those out quickly here from Sasha Rosmo. I do have a regret for not winning a medal for my country, both in singles and mixed. I just didn't deliver yesterday and today. Level of tennis dropped also due to exhaustion mentally and physically. I don't regret coming to Olympics at all. I believe that there are no coincidences in life. Everything happens for a reason. I had some heartbreaking losses at the Olympics and big tournaments, and I know that those losses have usually made me stronger. I know that I will bounce back. I will try to keep going for the Olympics in Paris to try to win a medal for my country. So that's in 3 years' time. I'm sorry I disappointed a lot of fans in Serbia, but that sport, I gave it my all, whatever I had left in the tank, which was not so much. I hope that the physical consequences won't create a problem for me in the US Open. That's something I'm not sure about right now, but there are no regrets. You have to give your all for your country. I have withdrawn from the mixed because of injuries, not only one. I hope that won't stop me from playing the US Open. Third time in semis, I lose in the Olympics. For my standards, only one medal. And that's the bronze medal he got? Yeah, bronze medal was in Beijing. He says, I feel bad for Nina, that's Nina Stojanovic, because we did not fight for a medal in mixed, but my body said enough. I have played under medications and abnormal pain and exhaustion. My heart is in the right place because I know that I gave my all. Those are the quotes of Novak Djokovic. I think it's a shame that he couldn't find a little bit more to go out on court and play alongside her, personally. I'm not in his body. I don't know what he's feeling, but I do feel very sorry for her.
Yeah, I was really upset by this, actually. I was really upset by it as an Olympics fan and Olympics romanticist. Because while I understand it, I do. I don't, assuming all this comes with the caveat that if he, as you say, we're not inside his body. If he was physically unable to play that mixed doubles match, then that's that, obviously. Now, I'm gathering from those quotes that, yes, his tank is empty. Entirely understandably so. What he's trying to achieve, what he's been trying to achieve, is the ultimate. There's a reason it's never been done in men's tennis. I can't even imagine how he must feel. However, he entered the Olympics feeling drained and exhausted. He said that. He knowingly entered the singles and the mixed doubles, and the mixed doubles entry list didn't come out until Tuesday UK time. I don't know whether that was Monday Tokyo time, but after he had played at least his first singles match, so he was aware of the conditions, aware of the kind of lie of the land and the task that lay ahead of him at that stage. So I'm taking from those quotes, and if I've got it wrong, that it wasn't that he physically could not have played that mixed doubles match. It was that he had just had enough. And I understand the feeling of having had enough in his shoes. But I just don't think you can do that at the Olympics. I think you can do that at a Grand Slam. But I think not at the Olympics. I think of James Blake and his comments about the Fernando Gonzalez incident in Beijing in 2008, where Gonzalez made contact with the ball. I think it was at 9-8 in the third set, and he didn't declare it. The ball went out. He didn't declare it. He knew, but kept that to himself, and the umpire failed to notice it. And James Blake said, look, you know, it's a selfish sport. I understand it, and I would excuse it outside of the Olympics, but the Olympics is about so much more than selfish ambitions, I suppose. And yeah, it doesn't sit right with me, and I just can't stop thinking about Nina Stojanovic. And she's young, who knows what her potential is, but that could very well have been the opportunity for the best moment of her career, if not life. And she didn't even have the opportunity to fight for it. And he made a commitment to her. I saw a lot of people saying, look, the bigger question is, why did he commit to playing the mixed doubles? And I think that is a big question. But if I was her, I would be desperately upset. And I wouldn't feel particularly great if I were Ash Barty or John Peers either, because winning an Olympic medal via withdrawal, I can't imagine is a particularly great feeling either. So it just leaves a really sour taste in my mouth. And look, I know to be as extremely great and brilliant as the likes of Novak Djokovic are, you have to be single-minded in a way that I will never understand, and focused and determined and selfish in many ways, in a way that I, as a mere mortal, will never understand. But I'm a romantic about the Olympics. And it's really upset me to the extent that I'm not expressing myself particularly well about it. But
I think in terms of the entering of it, I think he perhaps just misjudged. Things were going so swimmingly at that point. He was beating Kei Nishikori 6-2, 6-love. He was winning the first set against Alexander Zverev as though he was nothing. And I think he, around about that point, I think he just hit the wall. I still think he should have, unless he was physically unable or he's going to cause himself more damage, he should have played this match. But I think that may be what ended up happening. And he went flat. And that is all I can come up with for why he faded so dramatically against Zverev, why he couldn't really play like himself today, and why he's kind of just walked off into the sunset really after that match. But yeah, I still think he should have played. Matt, anything to add?
No, I think you've both said it. I agree. I do think of that question of why did he play mixed doubles is a really important one, because yes, the Olympics are not a totally selfish pursuit. You know, there's always trying to do it for your country at the very least, but it could have been for him if he just entered the singles. He would have had total control over his Olympics. And I do find it odd that he played the mixed and have that potentially jeopardize that pursuit for gold. Like, I'm not saying the reason he lost to Zverev was because he'd played a couple of mixed doubles matches before, but it might have taken a little bit out of his canister. It could have played a part. I do find it odd. And of course, the big question now is what the impact of this Olympics is going to be going forward, because we've seen Novak Djokovic lose in the last, 48 hours, more times than we've seen him lose all year, basically. And I thought John Wertheim had an interesting turn of phrase on Twitter that could this embolden the field?
Yeah, that's where I think the more likely impact is. I think still think best of five is probably the difference maker there, but I do think it'll embolden them. I think that there is something.
Yeah, because I think, you know, so much of what Djokovic has achieved this year is about him being great at tennis and better at tennis than all the other men on the tour at the moment, and that is still going to be true. But there is a part of it that is aura, and whether that has been chipped away at enough this week for the other players to think, I've got a shot now against him, time will tell.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Well, let's finish on a jollier note because I have just had the pleasure, not if you've Elena Vesnina or Veronika Kudermetova, but I've just had the pleasure of watching the conclusion of the bronze medal match in the doubles, in the women's doubles. And it was just, again, an absolutely uplifting experience to see the team from Brazil of Pegossi and Stefani come back from 5-9 down in the match tiebreak to beat Vesnina and Kudermetova to win the bronze. And they did it with the most stunning tennis for a start. I mean, I do think Vesnina, she choked a bit, really, but she was also forced into it by the way, the dynamic manner of her opponents, Laura Pegossi and Luisa Stefani. Stefani, who's a world number 23 in doubles, really, really established doubles player. I mentioned her yesterday and the fact that she'd had that really good partnership with Hayley Carter. And I've watched matches theirs before and really enjoyed them. But her partner is not used to playing at this level at all, Pegossi. And I was reading the piece written by Tamani Karel before I actually watched the match. His piece made me actually seek this match out to watch the conclusion of it. And he was talking about how their combined ranking wasn't good enough to make it into the original Olympic entry list. And it wasn't until a week before the event began that they got in. And they just threw all their plans out the window, flew to Tokyo 2 days later. And 2 weeks on, here they are on the court, in tears, just in disbelief. And again, just bedlam in the stands for the 7 or 8 Brazilian team supporters and members.
The smallest that bedlam has ever been.
Yeah, and yet it felt like it filled the stadium for those few minute moments. I mean, I felt terrible for Vesnina and Kudermetova, but there's always going to be that flip side, isn't there? But I mean, Vesnina's had big wins before. This was the moment of their lives, really. Particularly Pegossi, who's just, you know, in her interview afterwards, you could just tell she could not believe this is happening. Wonderful. Mm.
There's been some talk, I think, in the last few days, as there often is at the Olympics, surrounding tennis, about whether it would be better as a pure team event. And I think that talk has really picked up in the last few days because it hasn't been a particularly invigorating tennis tournament. I think, you know, we can all agree with that. There have been some good stories the last few days, but overall it has perhaps disappointed slightly. And some people think tennis at the Olympics should be a sort of Hotman Cup style where you enter as a team and, you know, you play men's singles, women's singles, men's and women's doubles, and then some mixed doubles as well. And look, I think that really could be amazing and great, and it could inject real life into the Olympics tennis event if you think it needs it, and it would be a point of difference for the tournament. But there are a couple of issues I see with it, and one is the lack of medal opportunities. I think it would generate. I can't see how you would get more than 3 medals out of it. And now tennis offers 15 with the current setup. And the other one is you wouldn't get a story like the one which was Pegossi and Stefani. And I think those are, in many ways, the Olympic stories that we remember and we love. You know, you wouldn't get a Monica Puig because the power balance would be just so much in favour of the strongest teams, and you just wouldn't get these upsets and these emotional highs for players like we see so often at the Olympics. And I think Pegossi and Stefani embodied that today. This was the moment of their careers, and that is very, very special. And I'm not sure how you would replicate that in a team format, but, you know, I think that conversation will continue. But this was really amazing today.
Yeah. Personally, I'm happy with it as it is in the Olympics in terms of a format. It's just more mixed doubles and mixed events that I want to see the rest of the time in a proper big event. We've talked about it so many times. Combine those events and we can have a great time. Anyway, talking of having a great time, I think that's what we're going to be doing tomorrow when we're looking back on the Sunday schedule, which starts 7 a.m. UK time with the women's doubles gold medal match between Bencic and Golubic against Siniaková and Krejčíková. That's followed by the men's singles gold medal match between Alexander Zverev and Karen Khachanov. Who do you think is going to win that?
Well, there's the interesting head-to-head, isn't there? Khachanov? I think
Khachanov might take him out.
Yeah, let's say Khachanov.
Any thoughts, Matt?
That's fun.
I couldn't possibly say. I genuinely don't know. That's great insight, isn't it?
Yeah, just what we like, Matt. Lovely. And then we've got, after that, the mixed doubles gold medal match to finish things off with Aslan Karatsev and Vesnina, who I suddenly now kind of wouldn't mind winning, just to cheer her up after
Rublev
today.
And Pavlyuchenkova have brought the vibes this week.
Yeah, I mean, I think Vesnina has got Karatsev smiling, which has been quite an achievement. I've enjoyed seeing that.
Good going there.
The thing about Vesnina is, well, first of all, if you'd said at the start of the year that Vesnina and Karatsev would be in the gold medal match, you would have thought, what are you on? Because Vesnina was not a tennis player anymore. And Karatsev, who the hell is he? But here they are. And actually, Vesnina has had an incredible comeback. You know, she reached the mixed doubles final at Roland Garros with Karatsev. She reached the Wimbledon final with Kudermatova. And now she's in this final. She just hasn't won one yet. So it kind of would be nice for her to win one. But I agree, Rublev and Pavlyuchenkova are a lot of fun as a team as well.
What are the vibes to which you refer, Catherine?
Just a little bit of sort of pantomime style, little brother, older sister, not quite aggro.
Jiggly-pokery.
Yeah. Yeah. Fun vibes with a bit of an edge.
Slight awkwardness.
A la siblings, yes. Can you imagine them just sort of going to dinner together, just the two of them? No, you'd need like lots of other people there as a buffer.
Yeah. Pavlyuchenkova, I do think, has a wonderful line in just sort of, you know, furrowed brows of, say, what are you talking about? Which I really enjoy. I enjoy it in her post-match interviews on court as well, when she's asked a question that she doesn't think is particularly good. She doesn't do a huge effort to hide it, which I really enjoy. But anyway, that's to look forward to tomorrow.
Would you like to end the podcast, David, on some no-context Simon Briggs?
Oh, always.
Because completely out of the blue, I've just received a WhatsApp from him. It's just a link. No, hey, hope you're well. Thought this might interest you. None of that. Simply a link to a tweet by the food critic Grace Dent. The tweet reads thus, and it links to an article in The Guardian. So he's plugging a different paper. The tweet reads, "Do you like cheese? Do you want a restaurant where every course is cheese? Do you like cheese even better on a boat? Geez, have I got the place for you?" And the link is to a review of the Cheese Barge.
Kai, he knows you well, doesn't he?
The Cheese, blimey, it's a cheese-themed floating restaurant that's for people who possibly know they could be eating cleaner, but, well, life is short, so what the hell? Thanks, Simon.
Has it got any dogs on it? As well, you know, full house then.
It really would be.
That's actually really lovely. Amazing. From Simon.
Yes, that's, isn't it? It's very thoughtful.
Very thoughtful.
Mm.
Good lad, yep. Simon. We're at the point where we're reading out your private messages on air. And I've done that as well today. So this is the theme of this particular Olympic
we've
show.
Run out of content, content, so we're just reading out one another's WhatsApps.
Indeed. Well, it's been lovely to talk to you both. It's been a fantastic day of tennis to watch, most of it. And we'll be back talking about whatever happens on Sunday, tomorrow, in the company of our mascots, Zeus for Catherine, Scousel Mousel for Matt, and Rogue for myself. We've got Chris Albert Lee, our executive producer, who is also the owner of our mascots for the week, whose names are Matt,
Haider and Sommer.
Well, there you go. I remember that. The two lovely cats. You didn't write them down, Matt. So
I'm testing you.
Slightly reliant on you. But anyway, Chris Albert Lee, thank you so much for bringing them into our world. They are great picks that he sent. And so we much appreciate them. And in fact, I think we'll stick them on our Instagram, which you can follow us on, as you can on Twitter. Leave us an iTunes review. Tell all your friends about us. And yeah, sign up to the newsletter. The link is in the show notes. And we'll speak to you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.